Chapter 7. Nathan had been throwing up all day. He was finally asleep now, a pale, exhausted form that looked much too fragile against the pile of soft blue blankets. His eyelashes formed dark smudges against his cheeks. His sunken face appeared both too small and too old for a child who was only 4. When Marianne and James had arrived first thing this morning, allegedly having bolted out of bed the minute they saw the news, but appearing strangely well-groomed for a couple who had been wrenched from sleep by word of their son's death, they had eyed Nathan carefully. Marianne had been performing her favorite damsel-in-distress act, of course, all oversized blue eyes, pale face, and trembling hands. "I simply can't bear it," she'd said again and again in her overwhelming southern lilt. 40 years of living in Boston, and the woman could still sound as if she'd stepped straight out of a Tennessee Williams play. In between all the theatrics, however, Catherine could see both Marianne and James making mental notes. Boy is thin, lethargic, and obviously stressed. Boy does not move toward his mother, but clings to his nanny. Boy has fresh bruise on forehead. Twice Marianne tried to pull Catherine aside for a quick word. Both times Catherine held her ground. Prudence, the English nanny, was well-trained and had been imported by Catherine for her dutiful nature and inherent sense of discretion. She was still new, however, so while Catherine had given her strict orders never to leave Nathan alone with his grandparents, she had no idea how the girl would hold up under pressure. James could be very charismatic when he chose. For all Catherine knew, he'd convince the girl to fetch him a cup of tea, and that quickly the war would be lost. Catherine couldn't afford that kind of risk. Not these days. Marianne and James had offered to let her and Nathan stay with them, of course. After the terrible events of the night before, surely they needed some place to stay, somewhere far away from this tragic scene. "For God's sake, Catherine, think of the boy. Surely he doesn't look well." Finally, James had lost his patience. The minute Prudence escorted Nathan from the room, most likely to throw up again, the judge had turned on Catherine in a terrible rage.
"Don't think you're going to get away with this. Jimmy told us what was going on. Do you think you won last night? Do you think killing Jimmy solved your problems? Because I'm telling you now, they're just getting started."
And for a moment, Catherine had honestly panicked. She thought wildly of Jimmy's new security system installed 6 months earlier. The power light had gone off. She swore she saw the power light off. Then she realized that the silence had dragged on too long, that James was still regarding her with that cold, accusing stare, so she drew herself up to her full height and said as regally as she could, "I don't know what you're talking about, James. Now, if you'll excuse me, I have to plan a funeral for my husband." She'd swept out of the room, heart pounding, hands trembling. And a few minutes later heard her in-laws storm out the door. Then the house was quiet again, except for the sound of Nathan dry-heaving down the hall. Nathan hadn't cried. Not last night, not today. He probably wouldn't. In that way, he was Catherine's son. He faced everything, the doctor's appointments, the endless needles, the horribly invasive tests, dry-eyed and solemn-browed. The nurses loved him, but even when they touched him, he flinched.